The following television show is entirely fictitious. Any similarity to the history of any person living or dead?
Who does the voice of this guy?
That's Kevin Richardson. Kevin Richardson.
It is Kevin again. Who did this all, I guess again this is illegal, but I think he did this all for free. Or we backbilled, I'm not
you
sure.
You wonder why there's going to be a SAG strike.
Don't get me started.
Look at us breaking the third wall. I'm Randall. Recognizing the cartoon as a cartoon or as a TV show.
Thank you. We've been getting a lot of fan mail lately, and we thought tonight it might be fun.
Oh, we're watching again, aren't we?
I know, we just fall into the trap of watching.
Is the line getting thicker around the characters? Is it
does seem very thick there. The mark of a great show is when the creators are just in love with it.
Jen Schwalbach is my wife. That was her name. I got that into the show, but it never aired, so I never got laid off of that.
If you go to the Clerks, the animated show website,
which is housed at www.viewaskew.com.
It is frozen in time.
Oh, that's awesome.
There's a promo that this is the next episode that's going to air. And it just says, like, coming next week, the virus episode.
Right. Well, it made it in TV Guide, right?
Yes, I think so.
For a couple of the TV guides that you get in your paper, it was in for like 4 more weeks.
Lando was our black character, voiced by
Mario Joyner.
Yeah,
Mario, who is
the great Mario Joyner,
just hilarious. Hey, Lando,
say what up? And we intended to use him as the voice of Black Wisdom throughout our run on the series,
which was 2 episodes.
What's with the dogs, woman?
But that really works. The Lando joke works in this episode pretty well.
Yeah,
and it does repeat a lot, which is also good.
Everything works when it's in order.
Look at the naked girls back there.
Yeah.
Hello.
That's why the show never got aired.
This was a scene, that shot of him sleeping under the counter, that drove the Koreans insane. It just seemed like...
Man, no sleep under counter!
They just had no idea of what the joke was. And I remember it came back, and it looked like the counter was a room, so the counter was like 11 feet tall, and they just couldn't... There were just certain things where they were just like, why? Chris?
Yeah, you know, I actually don't remember that controversy. We'll have to pick one that's more indelible.
They seemed... It was always funny, like, the big things that they always had trouble with were things like the writing, where, like, if you were sending them a design where it said quick stop, they could copy it, but they didn't know what a quick stop was or is. And so sometimes you would just, like, they weren't copying it that well, and it was like, oh, it won't matter what letter we put here. And so you would just
get
so these,
at one point it was quick stop.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, one letter's as good as another.
Quick stop, quick stop, who cares?
Well, I think
your show never air!
They're just getting hounded to make this stuff so quickly. Sometimes they send it out. We'd get shows back where the wrong characters would be speaking the lines, where they wouldn't be painted. I don't really think they think twice about it.
The way the shows were done were there were different animation teams in Korea.
Right.
There was Team 1, Team 2, and then there was later, I guess, a third team. And after the first two shows came back, it was clear that, what was it? Team 2 was better.
Team 2 was good.
And Team 1 wasn't.
What's funny is that we sent a test out to a bunch of studios to see who to award the show to. And this one studio won it, and we said, well, we want that director for the show, and the test was really terrific. Show 1 came back, and it, you know, wasn't great. And we figured that, well, you know, it's the first show, maybe that's to be expected. Second show came back, and it looked terrific. It was what we had in mind. Third show came back, wasn't great again. We found out it was that original director who actually got the studio the show.
Water.
So we had to fire him.
That was animator Han.
That was director Han.
Director Han.
Yeah, but there were three teams. We went to Korea, and we called them Sleepy, Grumpy, and Happy. One guy, and Han was Mr. Happy. The other two guys, I'm not quite sure what their names were.
But we fired Han, which was much disgrace to
his
family.
Well, we fired him, but then when show 6 came back, there were a lot of Han-isms that were creeping back into the show. It turns out they didn't really fire him. They just put Sleepy and Grumpy, you know, teamed him up with Han to help.
You think I gone? I don't leave!
Now, I not fire
you,
me.
Barry?
I fire you!
Well, they were probably afraid he'd commit suicide. Spotlight or something.
We're making a movie.
Gilbert.
But he had
now,
the last laugh.
You know how many times, Dave, you
Chris
made
Bailey, you fired!
We see you episode air twice!
now, watching this part, just the pain comes back of redoing the Patrick Swayze caricature until it didn't resemble Patrick Swayze at all.
They drove us crazy with it. And we tried to get Patrick Swayze, who his lawyer said, we just absolutely refuse to do something like this, and that he has no sense of humor about any of this.
On the grounds, and also they didn't want to portray Patrick as having working in a pet store, because it would imply that his career had taken a turn for the worse. And we were like, and?
Isn't that truthful?
Masturbating. It was the one honest joke we had in the movie.
There was a joke later at the end. Oh, by the way, we should just make a...
Dan
Etheridge is Mr.
Plug. Mr. Plug.
Who has an incredible scene coming up later where he is just wonderful, which we'll mention. But he really was great. With Patrick Swayze, later there's a line at the end of the show when they leave where he says goodbye and he's going off to make a movie. And it's like, and then he says, I'm not really in the movie. And they were just obsessed with, like, he has to be in a movie. He can't not be working. This was legal, again, saying, like, he could sue if he's not in a movie. And I was like, but he's not in movies.
Emergency coming through. Stand aside.
What happened?
That filthy monkey bit him. Get me a rag, a needle, and some fishing line. I'm going to have to field dress.
That's a great read.
Yeah, Etheridge isn't even a cartoon voice guy. I mean, none of us were, but Etheridge was yet another one of us that wasn't really a cartoon guy. He's a producer in real life.
But the funniest thing was his story, which was he was at Yale Drama School or regular Yale?
Yeah, no, he was at Yale, but he was big into drama, and he would get the leads in the plays. And another guy named Ed Norton would be like Cop 2. And also Paul Giamatti as
well.
Yeah,
Giamatti was the other guy,
was like Cop 3. And he's like, I don't know what happened.
No. Now get out! Out!
Because we tried to get Ed Norton as Cop number 2 also, and would not do it.
Well, he insisted on directing.
And making Dante a rabbi and Randall a priest.
Which I was all for, but the network wouldn't go for it.
That was from Jaws. Hey again, Lando.
Hey again, Randall.
Discreto burritos.
We never did that t-shirt.
No, we never got to do many t-shirts at all. We had one t-shirt for the show that you made, didn't you, Dig?
Yeah.
And it had a picture of...
Oh, we have to stop real quick.
Good.
This is real.
Yeah.
Because Dustin Hoffman had sued someone over some picture or something, this is real. It was originally we wanted just Dustin Hoffman because he was in the movie Outbreak. And then they wouldn't let us use his face, so we used Al Pacino. But that's a real reason why we sort of tried to cover it, but...
Wound up being funny.
Yeah, but it was just like they really, the obsession with being sued was just amazing.
How are you? Anyway.
The one shirt that was ever made would basically said what, Clerks the First Six? And it had the Silent Bob picture up front, and on the back it said, Nothing Can Kill the Grimace, which actually comes from the show.
Comes from this episode. This, by the way, I thought was some of the best animation in the entire show, for whatever that's worth to you, Chris.
No, I thought this was one of the best-looking shows. They finally started hitting their stride.
Once we fired and disgraced animator Han.
Well, Alan Bodner, who was the art director, he went with me to Korea.
Yes, but it was also the ritualistic rape of animator Han's family that put them in line.
I remember he wrote us a letter saying how dishonorable that was.
Well, examples are important to set.
The foot binding also. James Woods, huh?
James Woods, we got some more talent on the picture.
CIA offered, it was pretending.
That was excellent. The head of casting, what was his name?
Jamie.
Jamie, yeah. I guess knew James, Mr. Woods, from some of his other animation work.
Which and, we can say, I mean, he was the voice of Hades.
Hades, where he
on
was
the
incredible.
Disney in the movie and also on the TV show, the Hercules TV show they did.
And he convinced him to come in because of that. And he was so wonderful. And Kevin, you really gave him the best note, which you sort of just said to him, be James Woods. Because originally he was being more sort of slower and military-like. Oh, real quick note here on these robot lines. When Dan was recording these, every time he would do the robot lines, he would touch his chest as if he were opening an actual...
He did act out the part.
Yeah, he would always do that. He would touch a robot expression, and he would touch his chest, and it was a very nice little moment, a real acting moment.
The Two Giggling Girls was the first appearance, and it was a running joke as well.
Which, of course, didn't work because they aired the second appearance of the Giggling Girls first.
Yeah, the Giggling Girls saw the error, didn't they?
They did, in the courtroom episode 4. Yeah.
A year ago?
And the one Giggling Girl was the voice of Batgirl, wasn't she?
Yes, Tara. Tara something. And this was April, who was wonderful.
April was great.
April does a lot of women's voices throughout our shows. She really made us laugh.
And Tova Hernandez-Carlson was your joke, which was great.
We go now to City Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, the mayor.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry I was...
This is Al Franken, by the way.
SNL, former, well, original writer.
Original writer.
SNL.
And actually the person who got me hired at Saturday Night Live originally, I guess my mentor, for lack of a better word.
He wrote Rush Limbaugh's A Big Fat Idiot.
Which is excellent. So there you go, Al. Thank you. When he did this thing, the first time he did it, he was sort of, I don't know, he was doing a voice and it was funny and stuff. And I think I said to him, do it a little more like his Al D'Amato impression. And I think Al's, even though D'Amato is Italian, Al sort of, I sort of was like, you know, do it more sort of annoying and whatnot. And I think Al's response was, okay, so do it up. And he sort of did it that kind of, hi there, we're sorry, but anyway, I was going to say, we really like, we were sort of, when we were talking about the mayor...
So let's see, we've offended Koreans and Jews.
Well, we already offended the Jews, so... And maybe Al didn't exactly say that, maybe I mumbled it, but I don't know.
How Al is calling his lawyer as we speak.
I want you to choose a suitable picture for my obituary.
How about
but,
this
one?
No!
Now we've offended gays.
Oh, and real quick, just as we can, because this is a commentary and we're filling time, but the tall man in those two pictures is a writer named Ian Maxtone Graham, who's a writer, you see his name on The Simpsons, and on old Saturday Night Live, and Ian actually, he's a friend of mine, and one day a book came out on Studio 54, and in the book is a picture of like... Andy Warhol, like, standing on the balcony, and Ian is standing holding a drink, like, near him, which just fascinated me. So when we were doing this joke, it was always add a tall guy to it, which is sort of a joke for three, which is really the best kind of joke in the world. But,
Ian never saw the show.
No, Ian never. Dude, not a fan, but,
The guy doing the voice here?
No, not yet. In a minute.
Right, in a minute. The guy who's... He plays the guy taking the order. The fast food guy.
Here it comes.
I thought you said two cheeseburgers with...
That's Dana Gould, who
here's
is...
No ketchup. Why don't you just wipe it off?
Great line, Randy.
And Dana really helped us early on by just, like, laying down a lot of, like, sample tracks for us when we had no cast.
It was also there for some of the original reads.
Read-throughs, too. Like, when we didn't have a Leonardo yet, we hadn't gotten Alec Baldwin. He did it and really, like, laid down a lot of the attitude and the ideas, and he really bailed us out, and he's a hilarious stand-up. Actually, he's a writer on The Simpsons now himself. He got a job there, I think.
Dana did?
Yeah, he's absolutely hilarious, and he's done a couple of shows that are just wonderful of his own.
We should point out what the reads, in order to make a cartoon, is a multi-step process, and one of the first things you do, of course, is write it. And then when you got a script all together, you sit down. Well, I don't know if
and
it's normal,
just
but...
real quick, just before we even do that, the way we would sort of work is Kevin and I sort of just, like, would split up the scripts usually, like, almost sometimes, like, half and half. And then basically just take turns rewriting, basically, and just getting it to where we liked the script. And at that point, then it went forward from there.
And we would also do these things where we'd write the script, and then we'd have, like, a round table where we'd kind of sit in the room and punch up with Steve Luckner and...
Brian Kelly.
And Brian Kelly. And throw out Steve and Brian with the, I guess they got big TV background, correct? Like,
yes.
Brian used to write for News Radio.
News Radio, which...
And Steve has written for...
Steve has been fired from more shows than any other man alive.
It was an amazing process, and they're very funny guys, but it was an amazing process to me and Mosier, because I've never written collaboratively. So this is the first time I was writing collaboratively, but we would sit there and watch, like, these guys throw out a million jokes. and one joke would make the script. And it was just like, how does somebody live like that? But I mean, they're just used to it.
But it's great because it's like you're not expected to, like, if you throw out the first joke and it stinks, mm-hmm. no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
And just it puts some of the better thing. I mean, it was out of one of those sessions that we originally, with the whole mayor and the police chief
right.
just coming up, we were sort of trying to figure out how can you do a mayor at this point when the Simpsons have Mayor Quimby and South Park has a female mayor, and we just didn't know really what to do because it just seemed like all the types are taken.
Right.
And I think it came out of, I think it may have even been from Steve Luckner actually, just this crazy idea of Mayor McCheese, and we sort of landed on this idea of that our mayor would always be in costume. In this first episode, it would be these McDonald's costumes, and then later on, he would always have the excuse of whatever happened, he had just been going to or coming from a costume
party.
And
he had to rush to the press conference.
He rushed to the press conference,
and he couldn't get out of his costume.
The zipper was jammed, and that was going to be a running joke.
And from that came Big Mac, who comes later on.
Coming up.
And then in the Big Mac joke, that joke got longer and longer just by everyone sitting around and throwing out joke after joke.
Like Hamburglar, because once you have
right, you just got to keep going. Which is responsible for that great line coming up about nothing could kill the Grimace.
And we had to go to the McDonald's people and convince them, which actually was probably a pretty big to-do. I mean, they really did look at this,
mm-hmm.
and they went with it, which I give them a tremendous amount of credit for. And they hooked us up with character designs mm-hmm. and like what their characters looked like.
But at first there was that step where they were like, well, you can't say nothing can kill the Grimace.
Right.
But we made the argument of like, but we're saying the Grimace
is so powerful
that
so
nothing can kill the Grimace. The joke works in McDonald's favor. You just have that much power. Your characters are that powerful. And they're like, yeah, all right, run with it.
White Lando, I
Where
was
does
like,
one meet the McDonald's people?
You only talk to them on the phone. Here it is.
It's a little box, like in Charlie's Angels.
By the way, doing the voice here and doing voices all throughout the show is Mike McShane.
Yeah, who you would recognize as Friar Tuck in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
And
you've seen him on...
He did a Seinfeld. The way I met him was he did a Seinfeld episode... in the Backwards episode, he played FDR, Franklin Delano Romanowski, and he was just hilarious. And
he also
always
was on Brotherly Love, that show.
Was he?
Yeah, he was the mechanic, the big okay. mechanic guy.
And he was also in Office Space as well. He plays the hypnotist.
Yes, who dies, who has the heart attack.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely hilarious. And
great guy and a great voice artist.
I think he missed like the final episode because he was doing a play in England, but his voices are all throughout the episode. I think he has scenes with himself in a certain point where he's doing two or three voices, and he was just wonderful.
Kid in the Helmet was
Kid in the Helmet.
Yeah,
that's another mention.
This is favorite action sequence in anything I've ever been involved with.
And again,
just the same Musk. We never really have action.
The music, is just incredible. Going back to a Jim Venable, because he really kept things moving and sort of those weird instrumentations.
I like
and
this
real
the
action
smile.
Movie.
I just can't stay mad at that monkey.
So the steps of making a cartoon after it's written, we would sit down and do a read, like essentially with an audience. We'd have people in the audience. Chiefly it was the network execs who were reading or listening to the read, but we were able to bring in other people and stuff, friends who we knew would laugh at the stuff. And
because network people never laugh. Even if they love it, they don't laugh.
And we'd sit all, you know, at a table kind of like this and just read through the script.
Can they see this table?
Yeah, I think there's video. So if you can't see it, there's a long table.
If you can't,
sitting
it's
on
a lovely antique wooden table.
There's a Chippendale, and we're all sitting down in very large chairs.
In smoking jackets.
But after the read, once it kind of got approved, then it moves on to...
Then we would
Chris.
Record it.
Yeah.
Well, we
moves on
it.
To well, we record it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was watching this moment. I was waiting for. I put in a little bit here that reveals that the co-pilot's gay.
Not be gay, especially when you.
See, he's kind of surprised. Right. Over suspiciously.
And by the way, the voice of the pilot is Bryan Cranston, who
right.
had been
who's now on. He was in.
He was the dentist on Seinfeld.
Now
he's huge. He's the dad on Malcolm in the Middle.
Right.
And
he would tell us about that show. And
we were like, whatever,
right.
Malcolm in the Middle. See ya.
Malcolm will be canceled. We'd
yeah,
say.
We'll see you when we're on our third season. We'll see you, sucker.
Well. Okay, but back to making the show. You wrote the script.
So after we write and after we sat down to the reading and then we do the record. then the stuff
well,
goes
from the
to
record,
you.
Right,
then we
would
tape.
We would tape everything, and then we would edit the tape so that there was a voice track, basically. And it was all the performances edited together. And then basically, Chris?
And then then what happens is I would sit down with the storyboard artist, and we would go over each line reading and talk about the staging, where the camera would be placed, and how they would draw the performances of the characters. And they literally draw the entire movie out like a giant comic book or comic strip. Gosh, I don't know, something probably like 600 drawings, 700 drawings per show.
Some longer, especially the more action, the more they move, the longer they were.
Right, and then once that's complete, then we'd get together with Kevin and Dave again and just review it and maybe decide on another camera and Mosier and go over camera angles and review new sets and character designs.
And every character and every prop has to be designed because it's an animated
show. Yeah, we always
show.
Got these huge packets of drawings.
And
you
would get like 100. You get 100 Patrick Swayzes and 100 suitcases also.
Hmm.
And then 100 notes on the 100
notes.
Suitcases.
We were very hands-on.
It's like, you know, this horse is great, but is it in the Clerks style? I don't know.
Playing that song.
Trying to get a song from the Dirty Dancing.
Well, we couldn't get. We wanted originally. We wanted Patrick Swayze. On one point,
she's
we wanted
like,
to
she's
win.
Like the wind.
And
sings.
This, the closing, we wanted time. You know, I've had the time.
But
of
since
my life.
Patrick didn't like the idea of us doing this, the Dirty Dancing people
I love this
said
title
no.
Card.
The title cards always look incredible for the science says. So this one only makes sense if you had seen them all, but this
right.
one never aired anyway.
And this is your big Godfather homage.
Yes, which I was very happy about.
It's NBA All-Star Challenge.
This is the Santino beating up Carlo, which is my favorite scene. After he's beaten up Connie and Santino gets angry.
If you pop this onto another TV or DVD, if you pop in this and The Godfather and go frame by frame.
It's almost exact.
It's almost exact.
Even with the fake punch that
The punch
that
misses. Exactly. That's it's a very specific blooper in The Godfather. We captured it exactly. And I guess that's the last Science Says tag of the.
That was it. We only did those three.
We tried to write one more. We never got it right.
The Jewish one. The prejudice one. Because there's that great PSA that the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints used to do that was a grandfather and his grandson in the boat. And going, Daddy, what's it? Well, Grandpa, what's prejudice? And he's like, where'd you hear that? He's like, well, my Jewish friend.
No, it's like, well, Kenny told me that. Who's Kenny? My Jewish friend.
My Jewish friend. He goes, well, that's why you're prejudiced, because you think of him as your Jewish friend and not just your friend. Come back for episode 4.